and the loyalty that they had pledged to one another, and that Drupada had promised that he would share half the kingdom with them. So Drona said, well, to his wife and to his son, this is not a problem. I'll go to my friend and I will claim what he has promised me. So Drona went to Drupada and said, you know, here I am, a poor Brahmin, and you promised me half your kingdom. And Drupada said, what could you possibly have been thinking? We were just boys. Whatever makes you think that I would keep a ridiculous promise like that? Drupada was now proud of his position, and he just couldn't understand why. And he mocked Drona. You're just a Brahmin. Why would you be asking for these things? This is mine by right. It doesn't belong to you. What a foolish request. How could you be so naive? And Drona was silent but enraged. And he left without saying a word, but he had this determination in his heart that he would get his revenge. Now, what the symbology we're talking about here is that Drupada, you know, is this dispassion, this spiritually inclined force. And at the beginning, often, of our spiritual lives, our past habits seem to cooperate with us. We seem to be friends. It looks like we're going to be able to do this together. That's what happens when you first get on the path. It's not only that you have the energy of doing it in the moment, but you have this sensation that, you know, all of your past is helping you. And it is, because if you didn't have samskaras towards the spiritual path, you wouldn't be able to get on the spiritual path. But the problem is that we have lots of different samskaras. And so as long as those samskaras, as long as Drona and Drupada were working together for a common goal, which was their training as youth and so on, there was a sense of sharing it. But as soon as those samskaras turn materialistic, then Drupada has to repudiate them. He has to drive them out. He has to mock them. He has to tell them, what could you have been thinking? I am now the king. I am now, you know, dispassion is now in command of this kingdom. And if you think, just because you used to be my friend, but now you're no longer my friend because now your desires are materialistic. So Drupada drives him away. So Drupada realizes that his wife's brother has a position with the in the household in Hastinapurna, in Hastinapura, in the royal household. So Drona thinks, I can go there and I can get a position because I have all this tremendous skill and they have all these princes to train. Besides, I know Bhishma and Bhishma knows who I am. So he's on his way to Hastinapura, and he happens to see, he sort of spies from behind a tree, that the Pandavas are there, and that they're playing a game. And they have a ball, but the ball goes into a well. And they're just totally bewildered. They don't know how to get the ball out of the well. And so Drona comes, and he sees their dilemma, and he says, here's what I'll do. And he takes a very valuable ring, and he drops it so that it falls right on top of the ball. And then he takes an arrow and he shoots it in, and the ring keeps the arrow from penetrating too far into the ball, but just far enough. And then he shoots a series of arrows, each one of which penetrates the arrow ahead of it, until he has a ribbon of arrows. And then he pulls the ball out, retrieves his ring. And they say, what an extraordinary feat of accomplishment. Who are you? And he says, go to your grandfather Bhishma and tell him what you have seen, and he'll know who I am. So they go and tell Bhishma, and Bhishma realizes who's there and comes to him and invites him. And when he hears Drona's offer to train these boys, Bhishma's overjoyed. He said, my palace is overrun with young men who need to be trained in the arts of war. You know, you would be serving us beyond my capacity to repay you if you would train them. So Drona brings his wife and his son, and he also tells Bhishma, he said, I'm going to do this for you, but there will come a point. I have a job that I need trained archers to take care of, and so the day will come when I'll ask for the payment for the services I'm giving you. And so Bhishma agrees. And that payment, of course, is that he has the desire to get revenge on Drupada. He's just biding his time until he can. So the Pandavas all begin to study archery, and so did the Kauravas, Duryodhana, and all the brothers. But Arjuna, it quickly becomes clear, is the prize student. He just has this capacity to follow in Drona's footsteps that no one else has. Plus, his his decorum, his high standards, his self-control, his spiritual nature is all very attractive to Drona, because Drona is our samskaras, and some of them are spiritual and some of them are not. And he, Drona, does his utmost to persuade his son, Aswatthama, the seeds of latent karma, to link himself with Arjuna, link yourself with self-control and self-mastery. But Aswatthama is just totally drawn to Duryodhana. The latent seeds of karma in him take him to material desire instead of to self-mastery, and there's nothing that Drona can do about it. It's past the offspring of past habits. Some of them are materialistically inclined. So then time passes and they develop their skill in this way. Now, let's go to another part of the story. You may remember that before Kunti had the five Pandavas, she had another son. In fact, that was how she got the mantra that she was later able to use with her husband Pandu. She was given it when she was just a young girl and very naively tried it out and accidentally brought to her the sun god, and the power of the mantra had to be fulfilled. So she had this son, and he was born with golden earrings and a golden breastplate. And this was the source of his great power, and by this she always knew she would recognize him wherever he was. But she couldn't keep him. She was too frightened for herself to have her family know that she'd had this child, because she was an unmarried maiden and she just didn't know how she could explain it. So remember, she wrapped him up and put him in a basket and put him on the river. Well, that young man grows up and he has two names. One is Karna, which is the name I'll use mostly, and he's also called Radheya, because his foster mother, as it turns out, is named Radha, and in honor of his foster mother, he calls himself Radheya. Now, the quality, Karna, that we're going to talk about now, is the quality of the desire for happiness in this world. It's an extremely subtle and very complicated quality. And Karna becomes one of the most compelling, sort of heroic, tragic characters in the whole story, because there is something so heroic and tragic about this desire to be happy in this world. There's another quality that Master describes about Karna, which makes it even more subtle, which is that Karna is the inclination in ourselves to be attached to things that give us pleasure, and then to justify it by calling it our duty. Now, that's sort of a little snippet in there, like, you know, people will say, well, it's not really that I really need to live in such a big house, but my wife really likes it. Of course, I would spend more time in meditation, but I have to take care of my parents, and so I need to do this. It's not really I who care about earning all this money, but it's the family business, and I need to do it for everyone. And just all these different ways in which it's not really, we're not really doing what we say we're doing. We're justifying ourselves because it's what we want. And so Karna has that sort of tragic flaw to follow his duty, but his duty also is something that he wants, and he's very drawn, as you'll see, to Duryodhana. So what happens is, as a little child, he was found, as you recall, by Radha and her husband, and he was raised in very humble circumstances. His father's a chariot driver. Their caste is called Sudaputa, which means the cross between a Kshatriya and a Brahmin. So it's his 16th birthday, Karna, and he's a magnificent man, you know, much bigger and different looking than his family. And because he's coming into his manhood, his father assumes that he will follow in his profession, because in those times, it was a very harmonious time. That's just the way it was. And his father wanted to provide a chariot for him and he could become a driver. But Karna is very distressed inside himself, because he has this overwhelming desire to follow the art of a kshatriya, to become, especially to learn archery and to become a warrior. And finally, in his dilemma, he is talking to his mother, and his mother said, you know, what is it that is so disturbing to you this day? He said, I have this unreasonable desire to become a kshatriya, to learn the art of archery, and it makes no sense. Here I am born in this situation, and father wants me to follow in his footsteps, and I don't feel that I can do this. Now Radha begins to cry. His mother begins to cry. And she's never told him about his origin or his birth, because she's loved him so much, she's just wanted him to really be her own son. So she says, she realizes that she finally has to tell him. And before she does, she says, Radha says, often in your sleep, my son, I have heard you talking. I've heard you say, who are you? Where do you come from? Why are you here? And your voice is so filled with longing and anguish. His mother says, why? What is it that is happening in your sleep? So Karna describes this recurring dream that he has, where a woman comes to him, and he's sleeping, and he sees the woman bending over him. And he can almost see her, but her face is covered with a cloth. And he can see by the ornament she's wearing and by the cloth that covers her that she's a person of wealth and position. And she just leans over, and he feels this tremendous sadness coming from her, and also love, but also sadness. And he feels all this longing to relate to her.